for argument this morning is Economy Folding Box Corporation against Anchor Frozen Foods. Mr. Mena.
May it please the Court, Ronald Mena on behalf of the plaintiff appellant. This matter comes before you after a bench trial involving the sale of custom-made boxes and claims raised in the defense thereof relating to defects in the boxes. At the trial level, the Illinois version of Part 6 of Article 2 of the Uniform Commercial Code was uniformly misinterpreted by all of the parties and the district court. The Uniform Commercial Code should be interpreted as a whole. The correct section should be applied.
Well, counsel, there's a pretty fundamental problem here, which is that you apparently never asked the district judge to apply Section 2, Article 2, Section 612. Is that true?
That is correct, Your Honor. That was not raised below.
Well, makes your position pretty much DOA, does it not?
It does not, Your Honor.
Judges don't have any authority to go dig up statutes that are never relied on by the parties.
Judge, we relied upon the Uniform Commercial Code, specifically Article 2, Part 6.
You cannot file a lawsuit in the district court, and when the judge says, what do you rely on, you say, the whole Uniform Commercial Code, Your Honor, you go figure out which portions are relevant.
You're right, Your Honor. I mean, that it is the duty of the parties to identify what is at issue. However, it is also, and has been since...
And there we are. You can't say the district judge erred by not applying Article 2, Section 612, when the judge was never asked to. It's not error to do things you aren't asked to do.
However, since Marbury versus Madison, it's been the black-letter law that...
Marbury against Madison does not relieve lawyers of the duty to raise the points of law on which they rely. Principles of forfeiture and waiver have persisted for more than 200 years after Marbury.
And Your Honor is absolutely correct. And, however, there are exceptions to the rule. It is not a bright-line rule. There are exceptions, which is what we rely upon. Since it is a question of statutory interpretation, Your Honor, we are asking this Court to exercise its discretion and to interpret the Uniform Commercial Code as adopted by the Illinois Legislature. And this Court has allowed that to be done in other cases and for similar reasons. Had it been raised below, except for this issue, the appeal would be the same. The record would be the same. Everything would be the same. The question is whether or not, in an installment contract, the defendant had a right to reject the first installment, which it did very abruptly, and whether it had a right to cancel the entire contract. Simply put, on the record before you, it did not have a right to do either one.
Well, technically, it revoked its acceptance, didn't it?
Revocation doesn't apply to installment contracts. There's a difference when you're dealing with an installment contract as opposed to a one delivery contract. What 2612.2 says is that you can reject the installment, but then in order to do that properly, there's a two-pronged test, the second of which is that the defect has to be incurable, and there is no evidence presented below whatsoever that the defect in the boxes, whatever they were in fact incurable. In fact, there was no evidence whatsoever linking the breakage of the boxes in the cold storage warehouses to anything that Economy did or did not do. Rather, the district court in paragraph 88 made a leap of logic and said that Mr. Tusillo wanted to have boxes that could be palletized a certain way, and that the defendant relied upon the plaintiff's skill in designing the boxes, and, quote, finally, the boxes were not fit for the particular purposes for which they were used because they fell apart. So because the boxes fell apart, somehow Economy is responsible, despite the fact there is no evidence saying that it was due to something that economy did or did not
do. Didn't the district court start his opinion by saying he believed the president of the buyer here, but he didn't believe the guy that was testifying on the other side?
Well, there actually were four witnesses for our side, Judge, one of whom was not believed. And Judge Manning, when she wrote her opinion, did note that. And in our brief, whenever we went outside of her findings...
Didn't she say something along the lines that I just suggested to you?
Yeah, she found that Mr. Green's testimony was less credible than Mr. Dusil's. Absolutely, she did say that, Judge. And when we supplied facts outside of her findings, we did not rely in any single instance on Mr. Green, who she did not find credible. We relied upon our other witnesses, for which she made no findings of credibility one way or the other. We have opinion evidence by Mr. Mitchell that was admitted and was never rebutted, and for which the judge did not find to be incredible, which said the reason that the boxes fell apart was because they were misused. The only single outer carton we received, the only thing we received, was waved as if it had been immersed in water, meaning at some point after the boxes left the defendant's warehouse, that the fish was left outside or not properly frozen so that it started to thaw and the condensation allowed the boxes to basically fall apart because they were wet. Now, is that the responsibility of the plaintiff to design a box that could do that when it specifically says on the outside of the box, keep at 0 degrees Fahrenheit? No. No testimony linked the damage to anything that we did or didn't do. None. The only opinion testimony actually goes the other way, which is why under 26122, there was nothing, he did not have a right to reject the installment. And under 26123, there's no right to cancel the entire contract. If you can't reject the installment, how can you cancel the entire contract? It does not make any logical sense. Additionally, the comments to 6.12 make it clear that when looking at whether or not you can cancel the whole contract, you have to look at the timing. That's one of the things. Their client said, you know, we'll take it. Just give us a better box. Don't worry about it. There was no issue raised by the defendant which said, well, we needed the boxes right now or else. Nothing like that. In fact, it was just the opposite. Their testimony that they adduced said, no, we'll wait. Don't worry about it. We like your product. We like your idea of selling it to the guys who drive house to house to sell the fish. No problem.
Well, Anchor's customers wouldn't accept the boxes. Isn't that what happened here?
That is correct. And what caused them to not accept it? What caused the boxes to fall apart so that they wouldn't accept it? Nobody knows. We don't know. We received one outer carton. We saw pictures of
maybe if Anchor fell, our customers won't take the boxes. That's all we want with this contract. I mean, why should they sit around and explore further? If their customers said they won't expect it.
But what was the breach?
That's the end, isn't it?
But if there is no breach by the manufacturer, then how can the person who bought it and shipped the boxes say, well, I'm going to stick the manufacturer with the bill because somehow my clients, third parties for whom the manufacturer has absolutely no idea who they are or any relationship with them, we're not going to be responsible and have to answer to these third parties? Unless the plaintiff did something wrong in the manufacturer, there is no breach of the contract. Just to say, well, my clients aren't happy with the boxes, doesn't allow a buyer of boxes to stick it to the manufacturer. That's not fair. That's not equitable. That's not the law. Additionally, there is a right to cure under 2612. And it's very clear under the only Illinois case to discuss it, which is the Bodine Sewer case, that we had a right to cure. We were never given that opportunity. The notice of rejection was mailed the day after the initial phone conversation saying your boxes are falling apart. How and why, we don't know. It was never told to us. We attempted for a month and a half, 2 months, to get boxes. We wanted to have the complete thing. We asked the defendant, can we call your clients to arrange to have them shipped to us at our cost so we can find out and we can help you? Answer, no, you can't. You have to wait until they ship it back to me, then I'll ship it back to you. Finally, after 2 months, we get one outer carton. One. We asked for the complete six-pack frozen so we could see what was going on. And that outer carton showed it was something that had to do once it left. The damage was caused by misuse after it left the defendant.
And what did the district court have to say about your claim that you had that you wanted the opportunity to cure?
The judge found that under the 2508, which is a right to cure when there's a single delivery contract,
yes,
that there was no right to cure, and that is correct. Under that situation, there wasn't.
Did the district court say why?
The district court followed the 2508 of the Uniform Commercial Code,
mm-hmm,
and we believe properly so. In a single contract, single delivery contract, that's correct. In our situation, there would not have been the opportunity to cure. If there are no further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Mena? Mr. Wolf.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Daniel Wolf on behalf of Anchor Frozen Foods. It's not just that Section 2612 was not raised in the court below. It's that Economy framed and advanced its argument under 2608, a completely different section of the Uniform Commercial Code. We responded to those arguments in our trial briefs and in the other pleadings that were filed. Notably in this appeal, Economy does not attack or contest the correctness of Judge Manning's analysis of this case under Section 2608. They assign no error to the decision that Judge Manning made under 2608. Therefore, if the Section 2612 argument was waived, this Court has no occasion to consider any other issue on this appeal. And we contend that Section 2612 was waived. It wasn't raised in the district court in the complaint, the trial brief, in the proposed findings of facts and conclusions of law filed by Economy, in the supplemental proposed findings of facts and conclusions of law filed by Economy. In none of those pleadings was Section 2612 mentioned. In none of those pleadings was the argument that this was an installment contract raised or mentioned. The district court had absolutely no reason to even consider that, nor did Anchor in its response.
The premise of your argument that one has to plead law seems incorrect, but the critical question in framing the issues for a trial is the pretrial order. Was 612 identified in the pretrial order?
The first time 612 was identified was in the appellate brief.
Well, I take it your answer is no.
No. Right, the answer is no. Anchor asserts that the argument was implicitly reserved because Section 2-612 is referenced in another section, Section 2-601, which was the launching point for the court's analysis. We'd argue that that's akin to handing somebody a map with directions to your home, and you have a pin in the wrong address, and when they don't get there, you say, well, you went down the right road. You should have checked out all the other houses and seen where I was. It is not incumbent upon the trial court to parse through the entire UCC to find out which section the plaintiff believes is, or which section is applicable to the plaintiff's claim, where the plaintiff doesn't suggest which section it is. Moreover, this is not a case that warrants the exercise of the discretion, to the extent this court even has it, to address that issue at this late date. The issue is not discussed, addressed, or approached in the district court at all. And therefore, we believe that this appeal doesn't go beyond the inquiry of whether 2612 was waived. We believe it was, and that ends the inquiry. Economy goes on in its brief, however, to analyze its claim under Section 2612 of the UCC. And specifically, Section 26 sub 2 of the UCC, which talks about rejection of particular installments. However, if Section 2612 were to apply, the relevant subsection of 2612 is 2612 sub 3, which talks about, and I'll quote, whenever nonconformity or default with respect to one or more installments substantially impairs the value of the whole contract, there is a breach of the whole. And again, Judge Manning did not have occasion to analyze that specific provision, but she did have occasion to discuss the substantial impairment issue, and she specifically found that there was both subjective and objective evidence that the value of this contract was impaired to Anchor, and as a result, Anchor was justified in revoking its acceptance. The standard of review here is clear error, and we submit that there's no clear error in any of Judge Manning's analysis. She made specific findings as to the credibility of the witnesses, specifically noting that she found Roy Tosillo, the witness on behalf of Anchor Frozen Foods, to be credible and believable. She found specifically that when Mr. Tosillo received both phone calls and letters from the two customers to whom he shipped these packed boxes, and those phone calls and letters both told Mr. Tosillo the same thing, that, hey, these boxes are falling apart, don't send them to me anymore, that was substantial impairment, both objectively and subjectively, and they'd had the right, and in fact did, timely revoke his acceptance of the contract. Economy also argues that they didn't have an opportunity to cure. There's a lengthy recitation of findings of facts in the trial court's order that talks about the month or so after these phone calls and letters came in and the dialogue back and forth between the parties as to how and if they were going to address these issues. There are letters back and forth from both sides, perhaps self-serving letters, in that Mr. Tosillo, my client, repeatedly asked Economy, how are we going to address this? Come to my office. Let's sit down. Let's figure it out. And the testimony was that ultimately Mr. Mitchell from Economy told Mr. Tosillo, these boxes are yours. Pay for them. We think there's ample evidence and that the findings of fact are justified, and there was no clearly erroneous findings, that there was an opportunity to cure. And I think Economy suggests that somehow these cartons could have been cured. But as set forth in the testimony and in the briefs and in the findings of fact, these cartons were a system. It was a system of an outer carton. These were custom boxes, an outer carton with six inner cartons that all fit together as a unit. When the outer cartons were no longer acceptable to my client's customers, the whole system failed, and they can't be separated, as I think Economy suggests. And for those reasons, I believe and would ask this panel to find that there was no clearly erroneous findings of fact or application of law by the district court in this case, and that in the first instance, any argument that Section 2612 is applicable was waived by Economy in this case. Absent any further questions, I have nothing further.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Wolf.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Mena?
both the district court in her opinion and the defendant in its trial briefs set forth and quoted verbatim the 2-601, which starts subject to the provisions of 2-612, and talking about how you reject. Now, what's the first thing I did is I looked at what 2612 was. Normally, that's what is done in interpreting a statute. When a statute starts, we're subject to, you look and see what you're subject to. And that's where the misinterpretation of the statute came in. This issue was implicitly reserved because the statute, as quoted by the judge in two places in her memorandum and opinion, and quoted by the defendant, starts off as saying it's subject to this provision. It's implicitly reserved. The other brief point I'd like to make talks about the opportunity to cure and how actions speak louder than words. It wasn't until after July where we asked to come to Mr. Tusillo's office to view the boxes after he sent us the one sample, despite the fact that we have letters and unrebutted testimony, in fact, confirming testimony from Mr. Tusillo, in which he acknowledges we asked to contact his clients to have it shipped to us. And we asked him repeatedly and begged him, give us the whole six-pack, the inner and outer, so we can determine what went wrong, so we can give you a box that you want, so we can cure any defect we may have caused. But we don't know if there is a defect here because we haven't seen the box. All we know is they're falling apart. We asked Mr. Tusillo, in what manner are they falling apart? He could never identify it for us. There was no opportunity to cure here. The actions of the defendant didn't comport with its requirements under the Uniform Commercial Code to give us, affirmatively cooperate, and give us the boxes. Never did that, Judge. We weren't given the opportunity to cure. The trial court should be reversed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.